Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and today I have a real cool guest. I'm with Rob Timmons. He's the owner and founder of Arcane Pickups. They're a boutique pickup shop out of North Hollywood, California. Rob wound his first pickup back in 1990 while attending the Roberto Venn School of Luthery. That's in Arizona, right?
Yes, Phoenix.
And since then, he's worked for numerous companies in the guitar industry, from large guitar manufacturers to small custom builders like Valley Arts and Tobias. And he's handled everything from running custom shops and artist relations programs to entire guitar divisions. He started Arcane with the goal of producing the highest quality, most uncompromised handmade pickups in the industry, and since then he's worked with many respected names in the industry itself. As a consultant, he also helped Tyler Guitar's founder, Jim Tyler, develop the Tyler pickup line, and he built the first 500 Tyler pickups himself in the Arcane shop. He also worked on a project with a highly respected pickup builder named Tom Holmes that eventually became the entire Japanese line. Today, Rob consults guitar companies on pickup design and construction. He builds pickups on an original equipment manufacturing basis for James Trussart Guitars. Sorry about that. And he also sells to artists, musicians, and distributors all over the world. And I was referred to Rob by a custom builder, Steve McSwain, who is a very demanding guy. So I know that Rob does great work. Rob's work isn't just a business, it's a passion, and he has a deep understanding of what makes a tonally superior pickup. You can find Rob and Arcane online at Arcane Inc., ArcaneInc.com. Rob, what's going on, man? Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, man. So what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
I'm always doing my regular line stuff. I guess the things I'm more interested in, we're doing a lot of engraving stuff on pickups. Actually, I'm working on some for Stephen McSwain right now that have like custom engravings to kind of go with his guitars. And we'll be seeing those lately. It's kind of the ones right now, they say Truth and Lies on each pickup.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So because he does those American flag guitars.
Yes.
So it's kind of a theme there, you know, sort of current to stuff going on today.
So that's so you're like basically personalizing the pickups.
Yeah. Well, all the stuff I do for Steven and other guitar builders too. It on the bottom it says Arcane Inc. and it says I have his logo, you know, McSwain Guitars, and then their serial number. It's starting at one, and then we go on from there to however many wherever it ends up at. So they're all done that way, and they're tuned to his guitars. And I do that also for other guys too. You know, a lot of the builders I make stuff for will, you know, personalize them because I want to do things that will make it special for that guitar, because a lot of them are, you know, more high-end instruments. So we try to make things that are worthy of being in a, you know, a handcrafted high-end instrument.
Very cool. So when you say engraving, you mean on the outside, like the pickup covers, or in the pickups itself, or?
We do stuff on the covers as well. That's more aesthetic type things. But then on the bottom of the pickup, it'll say that, you know, like where my logo is. My general line, it'll just say Arcane Inc. and it'll have a serial number. But the ones I do for builders, it'll be Arcane Inc. and then it'll say like the builder, like McSwain Guitars, and then a serial number that starts at one for them.
Okay, so this is totally unique. So that's really cool. So literally nobody else could have that particular pits, and it would be impossible outside of somebody else who bought a guitar from McSwain, for example.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's for their guitars, and some of the guys sell them aftermarket as well, because, you know, when people, like, they might like their guitar and they're like, hey, could I get a set of pickups, you know, from that builder that's made to those specs? And some of the guys sell them that way as well. And I do it for a lot of the different builders I work with.
Very cool, man. Can you give us a general, like, non-technical sort of Cliff Notes explanation of how a pickup comes together and what it actually means to wind a pickup? You know, you read all the time, an article that's you've probably seen on the internet a lot is when there was an elderly woman at Fender who wound a lot of pickups, and she was there, you know, Celia or something like that was her name.
Probably Abigail.
Yes.
That's That's the woman that a lot of people know. But there were other ladies too.
Yeah, that was her. But and I always read that, and like I think I know what winding means, but I don't really know what winding means. Can you give us a layman's, you know, explanation of that?
Yeah. Well, basically, you know, most all pickups are coils. You know, using a magnet wire. Generally, you know, the wire is about the thickness of a hair. And then it might be anywhere from, you know, we're winding that wire onto a coil form. And that could be anywhere from, you know, 3,000 to 12 or 13,000, sometimes more, turns.
Wow.
And, you know, per coil. So there's hand winding, you know, which generally tended to be the old way that Fender was doing stuff. Then there's mechanical, vintage mechanical machines. There's CNC winders now too that are, you know, with really accurate precision of where the wire lays and you know, counters. And I appreciate all of it. We do some of everything. We do hand winding, generally on a lot of the Fender influenced stuff. We have vintage mechanical machines that generally go on the Gibson, you know, humbucker PAF P90 stuff. We generally do those that way. But I also have CNC machines too, so I can appreciate all of it. You know, I like vintage and I like stuff that's somewhat modern too, or variations of it, you know, where we try to add precision to hand winding, you know, so it's consistent. So, yeah, but basically that's it. It's a coil form with the magnet wire and then magnets and then leads coming out of it that go underneath the string and then sense the vibration of the string. That's the simplest term for a pickup.
So what will determine, you know, you said it's between 3 and 13,000 winds. What determines, like when you're sitting there, do you say, okay, this one gets 4,500, this one gets 8,500? What's the determining factor or factors for that decision?
Some of the determining factors could be, you know, the coil form size, you know, how big the actual coil is. And then there's like stuff like tradition, you know, like if this was an old Strat pickup, you know, I have a complete book of specs for, you know, all different vintage, like different era Strat stuff. PAFs too. I have a lot of different versions of PAF humbucker, you know, things. And then it might be like, okay, within, you know, this coil size, we want it brighter or we want it darker. You know, and then it could be like a different magnet. We want it hotter. You know, there's stronger magnets. There's weaker magnets. You know, and there are the coil. If it's a humbucker, there might be two coils. Are they matched? Are they mismatched? So it basically goes, you know, we kind of tune them. You know, like I have my standard models, and I might, you know, somebody might have one of these pickups. You know, like a real popular model for me is like with a humbucker is called the Triple Clone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, okay, I like this one, but could I have something that's a little bit hotter? You know, and then I know what to do then. Or I like this pickup and I want something that's a little bit brighter and clearer, you know, and then you could adjust it from there. But generally, as it goes, higher DC resistance can be like darker, more compressed. Lower DC resistance, you know, less turns can be brighter and clearer sounding, you know. But then there's also, you take into account the magnets and the type of, you know, magnet structure of a pickup. So you kind of have to look at those, and we have to talk about it, you know, for if there's like a builder that wants somebody or a customer too, you know, or sometimes customers might have a certain type of pickup and I know the specs of that pickup, and then we could, you know, they could tell me what they would like and I could recommend either a pickup I have or occasionally we custom make them.
Very cool. So it's like combination of art and science is what it sounds like.
Yeah. You know, a little bit of intuition in there and stuff. And we, you know, it's tone, you know, which is subjective.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm open to, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you know, some people would consider, you know, voodoo or weird stuff, but I'm, you know, some people think hand winding is a myth, you know, that it affects tone, but I think there's something there. You know, if somebody doesn't believe it, then it's okay. You know, that's fine too. The pickup's still hand wound. It sounds good, you know, but, you know, it varies. I'm open to a lot of different things. I think a lot of things are small percentages adding up together to make, you know, a good pickup.
Yeah, I totally understand that, because usually it's not in anything you're talking about, oftentimes it's not one thing. It's like little subtleties that all add together to create the end result. So I totally get that.
Yeah.
So my next question was, what makes one pickup different from another pickup as far as tone and quality? And obviously whines, the number of turns, as you call it, is one thing. What else would be?
Magnet pipe. You know, there's Alnico 2, 3, 4, 5, Alnico 8, or ceramic. There could be, you know, steel parts inside of a pickup. You know, that gets into, like, the magnet structure, you know, of a pickup, you know, or the, you know, just the way it's built, like a P90, you know, compared to, like, a humbucker. That's a different magnet structure, you know, or a Strat compared to a humbucker. Those will affect, you know. So I think of them as more as, like, categories, and then we have a bunch of different models within that category, and then we can adjust them.
So let's look at Alnico 2 and 3, because that's the most popular ones out there, I think. Is that a fair statement?
I would say Alnico 5 is probably the most popular. That is the probably the most common one of the Alnicos used. But Alnico 2 and 3, you know, a fair bit as well. You know, then a lot of people ask me then, like, okay, what does Alnico 5 sound like or Alnico 2? Well, it's one.
That was my question. What's the difference between 2, 3, and 5?
I mean, they're different strengths of magnets. You know, like Alnico 5 is stronger than Alnico 3 and 2. And Alnico 8 is stronger than Alnico 5. But as far as there just being a tone for Alnico 5, I think it's one aspect, but then the coil structure comes into it as well, you know, so it's they kind of work together, you know. You can't just say, like, you know, Alnico 5, always bright, or it's more like how many turns are on the coil? What's the DC resistance of it? How tall is the coil?
Okay.
All that stuff can play into it, and, you know, people's ears get tuned to stuff too, you know, like Strat pickups or Tele pickups. Those are different. Tele bridge pickups got a metal plate underneath it, as opposed to like a Strat bridge pickup. So that's something to take into account.
Wow. So this you've really got to. There's so many moving parts here that you've got to consider when you're doing this.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things for people that want to get into it, you know. But then a lot of people like just the stock. You know, we sort of reverse engineered a lot of. Vintage pickups, and a lot of people like, you know, recreations of those, like clones of those pickups, you know. So we kind of, you know, in some ways have a guideline, you know, like a foundation, like a humbucker foundation, you know, and then there's variations you can do within that, you know, or add on to it. But it all depends how deep people want to get into it. And builders too. Some guys like the basic, you know, clones of vintage stuff, and then other guys want to get really deep into, you know, like Alnico 2 on the neck, Alnico 4 on the bridge, and this model, mismatched coils for this humbucker, you know, this one, neck pickups, matched coils. Some guys really want to get in there and tune that stuff, and, you know, which is fine too. Then we develop models that are kind of exclusive to their instruments, and then I build them.
What percentage of guitar players come to you and they have a whole big, like, I want Alnico 2 in the neck and I want the bridge to be this and I want that? What percentage of those guys actually know what they're talking about, or they're just sort of rehashing an article they read online to you?
You know, I don't know, because it's there's guys that are interested in that, and then there's guys that go more intuitive where they just want to try out a pickup and they're like, I like this, or I want to try something different. With the internet and forums, there's people that come and like really quote a lot of specs, which, you know, I don't know, maybe there's guys that have tried all that stuff, you know, and then there's other people that might have just read it today. I don't know, but I'm okay with it. You know, it's whatever. I'm okay with whatever works for people. I just try to, you know, I provide a product that hopefully they'll like. But definitely people, I think, more lately are more interested in the specs and have more of an opinion of, like, if they like Alnico 2 or Alnico 5 or Alnico 3.
Yeah, it seems like there's just a lot of bro science kind of stuff out there. And I always wonder, you know, information is so accessible now, it doesn't always mean it's correct, you know. And especially if you're not sitting in front of you playing it, I always wonder, like, like you can't even buy, you know, you can buy a guitar online and it sounds nothing like the guitar you played that your buddy had. It's the same exact model.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a, it's interesting because I've done a lot of stuff with, like, you know, a lot of guitar makers and you know, I've actually built guitars and there's, you know, just dealt with a lot of guys talking about guitars and there's people that, like, they want a certain thing, you know, and whatever their motivations for that is, you know, I've given up on trying to figure out that.
Oh, hell yeah.
A long time ago, you know, because I've talked to guys too. There's some guys that were like, you know, like, hey man, what's this guy going to do with this guitar? You know, and like, you don't know, you know, he might be a guy that just, you know, really likes guitars and he's okay with spending, you know, having several $8,000 guitars, you know, I don't question it.
Yeah.
You know, if people want to talk to me about it, I'm interested in talking about it, but I'm okay with it all.
Yeah, know? I hear you. Totally. I totally get it.
I try not to, you know, I've dealt with people too that were trying to, like, judge, like, hey man, this guy's, you know, going to be, you know, putting this guitar in his, on his shelf. And I don't know. I there's a lot of reasons to collect guitars. You know, some people just like them from the, you know, just to have them as a collection, and some people play them a lot and they might have one or two guitars that they play the hell out of, or they might just play at home for their own interest, or they might play, you know, out, or they might, you know, I deal with a lot of musicians that play professionally too. And some of those guys, you know, are really into details of it. Other guys are not, you know, so I'm okay with whatever people do. I'm just happy that people are still interested in guitars.
Yeah,
so.
I hear you. No, I'm with you too. I think anybody should have the right to, if you got the money. I mean, that's why people come to this country from all over the world, because you have that right to do it and not get questioned about it, you know? So I don't mean that as a political statement. I mean, just, it's like, what the hell is a big deal, you know? I agree with
you.
Yeah.
Well, there's some guys, you know, that I know that have just tremendous guitar collections, and there's people that, some guys that seem, I've seen it maybe on forums more, not directly, but people that seem to be bothered by.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's like, I guess it's their right to be bothered by that. you know, it doesn't bother me. I'm happy, you know, that they have that, you know, yeah. And they're, you know, but all that stuff too, though, any of these guitars we have, eventually someone else will own them.
Correct.
Keep them forever. So, you know.
And you have such a wide variety of lines. I mean, if you look at your catalog, there's not much you don't have. I mean, you got humbuckers, Strats, Tellys, P90s, and you have vintage, as you talked about. You got guitar, other guitar and jazz specialties. What my question was, what's the path from concept to finished product look like for you? And what's the typical timeline for this?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I'm a full-line pickup maker. I make everything.
Yeah.
I mean, bass, P-bass, jazz bass, custom stuff. So I'm interested in every type of pickup. I have a lot of models up on my website, but there's a ton more that I don't even put up there because it gets too confusing for people, but they're sort of my off-the-books models. You know, and then sometimes those will develop them, and then they'll show up later on the website if people have enough interest in them.
Okay.
So it depends, you know. There's stuff that I do for guitar manufacturers, you know, like OEM guys that will maybe start with a, they'll try one of my models, like say a triple clone, and then we'll say, you know, like, do you like that as it is, or would you like, you know, to do something a little different with that tonally? And then we'll start working on stuff and they'll tell me, and then we'll make, you know, a next version of it. Do you like that? Should we go, you know, sometimes it might be, okay, we're done here, or we might go through, you know, two or three versions till we tune it in. And then we'll make that like a model for them. You know, I did a lot of that stuff with like Trussard guitars, where we, you know, over the years made stuff, and then we sort of changed things occasionally, you know, and a lot of them are based off of vintage specs. You know, and there's other ones too, where I develop them with artists, you know, like guys like Phil X. We do a signature pickup for him that he sells on his website, and he likes P90s. We, you know, made versions of stuff, and he kind of came on an sort of an unusual spec for a P90 that was fairly overwhelmed, but it sounded great. You know, he uses a half stack straight in generally. And or guys like George Lynch, we developed a model with him, you know, where we talked about different stuff and developed it, you know. So there's that path. And then there's just my general research where I'm just, you know, looking at old pickups, and I like let people try them out. You know, I'm fortunate I have guys here locally. My shop's near a rehearsal complex, and we can let people try stuff out and just, hey, do you like this pickup? What do you think? Is there some way it could be better? You know, and so, yeah, so all paths. I'm open to all paths.
Your business sounds like an all-encompassing one. Like it occupies, there's probably a lot of time outside of the office, quote unquote, that you've got to be sort of on the ball looking for stuff.
Well, I'm always, I'm generally here a lot, but my, you know, there's bands playing like right nearby all the time, you know, or well, I guess I've spent a lot of times too with guitar builders and stuff at their shops, developing things. So yeah, I guess it's kind of wherever I am, but I spend a lot of time here actually just making stuff.
Yeah, it just sounds like you have to, it sounds like your awareness level is very high, and you know, I've done this and I've had that same, or I try to have that same awareness in business and stuff I do. And it's not an easy thing. It's, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 thing. It's an all encompassing to some extent.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm thinking of this stuff all the time. You know,
right.
My company is my hobby. I do something every day. You know, if I'm not here, I might be answering emails or, you know, taking pictures or working on the Instagram, you know, or just talking to people. But every day, yeah. And it's just basically what I do. So yeah.
Where are you originally from, and where'd you grow up?
I am from Miami.
You're kidding me.
Yes.
What do you do?
Yes.
Did you grow up in Miami?
I did, actually in Kendall.
Oh, that's Southwest. Yeah, yeah. I used to live in Plantation. I know that area real well.
Oh, yeah. 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 So I grew up there.
That's wild. How'd you get out west from?
Well, when I was, I decided I wanted to be a guitar builder. And there was a guitar building school in Arizona, Roberto Venn School of Luthiery. I went there. And from there, I got a job at Valley Arts in and they were in Studio City, and I—that's basically how I ended up in LA.
That's
and then I've always been here. And yeah, a lot of people don't know, but the guitar industry, really the electric guitar industry, there is a lot in Southern California. You know, it was kind of born here in a lot of ways, you know, like Rickenbacker and Fender.
Hmm.
But there's a lot of shops still here, a lot of different companies that people don't realize. But it's the most concentrated guitar building area, you know, for guitar companies is Southern California.
Yeah, well, there's certainly nothing in Miami, I can tell you that much.
there was nothing for me to do with the industry back then, at least, you know. And we had a couple music stores, you know, but that was about it.
Did you start playing guitar in Miami? Were you a guitar player? Is that how you got into this?
Yeah, I'd always been into guitar. I took lessons for a lot of years, you know, then I decided I wanted to be, you know, I'd always been mechanically inclined and I wanted to be a guitar builder. So
are you like a tinkerer?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Always. I'm still building, you know, parts guitars, to this day. And actually I really enjoy going to guitar builder shops, and just seeing how they do stuff. And, you know, if I can collaborate with something to make a pickup for them, I really like to do that. Something I try to make their pickup better, you know, so I want to make something that adds to it. So, yeah, I still enjoy that stuff.
Yeah. Most of the, you know, I've spoken to a number of guitar builders and engineers, guys that work on amps, and, they're all inherently tinkerers. Like, you know, they always took stuff apart, put it back together again as kids. And, you know, I think that's a very common personality trait for people that wind up, you know, doing stuff with their hands and like the stuff you do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I had projects like that. And well, I guess I kind of come by it naturally because, electricians, that was my, family's business. My father was an electrician. His father was an electrician. My, half brother is an electrician, so they were always, you know, in the Miami area. So yeah, it's, I guess my thing's sort of some ways related, you know, wires, you know, things like that, you know, not actually being an electrician, but some way it's kind of not that far if you think about it.
No, not at all. And in fact, almost all of the guys that I speak to, like amp guys more than builders, and I'd put you more in that camp because of the electricity. They have almost a like a reverence or respect for electricity.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting stuff, you know, just wires and how it's done, and you know, I guess probably being an amp builder would probably be more close to my you know, family's tradition there, but yeah, I guess this is all related, but yeah, it's all not that far when you think about it.
No, it's really not. Do you get back to Miami a lot?
I haven't been back for a bit. Yeah, it's been over 10 years. But I need to go.
No, you don't, man. Let me tell you.
Yeah. I like, you know, really Southern California kind of reminds me of it in a lot of ways.
Really?
But, you know, I like Florida. You know, I grew up on a lake. You know, I like...
Right. Yeah, right. You're in Kendall. All right. Okay. You weren't really in Miami because Kendall's like a nice bedroom community, really.
It's a suburb, yeah. But my backyard was a lake, so yeah. I swam like every day.
Yeah.
And fished, and I like you know, the Florida thing, you know, little beach towns and stuff. I like that. Beaches there, you know. Yeah, I can appreciate Florida. I can appreciate Southern California too.
Yeah, I'm in Tampa. I used to live on the East Coast. I like the non-city parts of Florida much better than the city parts.
I agree.
You know, fishing, small town kind of stuff, you know, swimming, just laid back. It's really nice to, you know, Dade is so high pressure, I find, when I go down. Like, I hate to fly out of, you know, the airport down there. It's always a little hectic. Maybe I'm just getting old.
It happens.
What do you want to do, like, moving forward over the next few years? Do you have anything different that you want to do as far as with the business, or even long term, if you have any vision for that? Like, where do you see your business going, or where do you want it to go?
Well, I mean, we're going to continue doing more of the same. I mean, a lot of people want, like, the vintage inspired stuff. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of stuff that's variations on that. But I'm also interested in doing stuff of, I try to bring a sort of artistry into it as well. So I like to do a lot of those engravings, like on the covers of pickups and things, and just add things like patinas. We really get into patinas as well. You know, and that sort of stuff that I did a lot with Troussart, James Troussart originally, but where it looks like it's a 5,000-year-old instrument instead of like a 50-year-old instrument. Stuff it's spreading, you know. Guys like McSwain too, he's into patinas. Scala guitars, those guys do patinas. Echo Park guitars. So it's sort of there's sort of being this other stuff that's sort of like it's sort of like taking on its own thing, where it's so we do a lot of that. I really get into like the textures of like metal and stuff, and but then just doing engravings too, you know. Like, oh, I do a lot of weird stuff like that that's I hope people will maybe catch on to. Maybe they won't, but I do a lot of, you know, stuff, engraved weird stuff. Some people think it's strange, you know, strange messages engraved on things.
What was some of the more bizarre ones that you might have done? And a bizarre is relative, but, you know, out there, let's just call it that.
Well, I guess you know, I do stuff, you know, we did things like octopuses and stuff engraved on things, just stuff written on them. You know, like for McSwain right now, I'm doing that one that says Truth and Lies. It's going to go on the American flag guitar, you know, and that can be interpreted in a lot of ways.
Sure.
You know, and then just stuff. I like words, you know, some of the words, you know, I've done things like there's one that was said science fiction on it, and that could have a lot of meaning.
That's wild.
One that it was called, it said Caligula, which some people like that. Other people didn't maybe appreciate it, you know, but that's okay too. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's coming, you know. They're limited edition things that you know, somebody might buy this one and then that'll be it. That'll be the only one that'll be ever made, because I do all the engraving in-house. I have all the machines for that, but there's a whole list of things, you know, and hopefully I think maybe people will buy those and appreciate the limited nature of it, you know, like the one-off crafted nature that here's this thing that's written. A lot of it's subtly engraved into it too. You wouldn't necessarily know it unless you really looked closely. So I like doing that stuff. You know, I like stuff that's a little outside the norm.
I think that that is going to be more and more of that moving forward. As I mean, as people have more and more choices, they are exercising that right. So I would think that's probably going to be real well, well received. No,
maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Some of the stuff has been successful; other ones have not been. So, but I look at it like too, though. Well, you know, it's a lot of the most valuable guitars today were not popular back whenever they were built, and that's why they're so valuable now. Like Carina V's and.
Right.
I guess the Paul, you know, in the '50s, it was, you know, production was stopped on it, you know, and Carina Explorers too. Those were, I guess, were considered a failure, you know, but they're worth so much now because they only made, you know, very small numbers of them. So maybe this stuff will be like that too. So, but anyway, I send them out there. Wherever they end up, we'll see, you know. But I guess that's kind of cool now with the internet, you know, and Instagram. I might just look up there and somebody will tag me one day in something and like, oh, that's where that pickup ended up. You know, with a custom engraving that was done. Only one of those was ever done, and then that was it.
Yeah, so, that's very cool, man.
So it's interesting to me.
What are some of the bigger surprises you discovered when you first got into this business or things that you weren't expecting to learn?
Well, probably the biggest surprise was when I finished the School of Luthiery and I went to work my first job. In the guitar industry, you know, I thought, okay, I'm going to be a guitar builder now. And they just wanted me to sand guitars. So, you know, and I was sitting right next to guys that had, you know, they were just basically guys off the street that were just sanding guitars.
Oh my God.
So that was a kind of an eye opener, you know, but you got to pay your dues. But I think I originally thought, oh, cool, I'm going to just go and work in a custom shop and make custom guitars. That was not the case.
Interesting.
You know, I eventually, you know, worked in custom shops and did that sort of stuff, but you got to build up to that. So that was kind of an eye opener.
Yeah, but.
And, you know, I don't know, there's always surprises. There's always surprises with stuff that we make, you know, like things that, you know, I'm willing to try stuff, you know, like with guys, like, you know, does this sound different than that? You know, like recently we were comparing rough cast magnets with smooth cast magnets on a humbucker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wouldn't think that it would make a difference in the sound, you know, but I'm open to it. And like I had one guitar builder that was really wanted to, you know, to find out because he'd heard that there was a difference. But I was like, okay, well, we'll just make this and let you try them and you can see. And then we can say afterwards that, hey, we tried it and there's a difference or there isn't a difference. And in that case, we didn't hear a difference.
But I
liked that we actually tried, though, because then it was like, well, you know, we actually can say that we've listened to them. You know, and you built the guitar, and I made these pickups, and we put it in there and listened, and we didn't hear a difference. But I'm also open to somebody, you know, saying that they can hear a difference. There's stuff where guys have told me they can hear differences on stuff like that. And they want like the rough cast magnet in there because they can hear a difference. And I'm okay with that too. I'm like, okay, I'll make that for you. And with the rough cast magnet. And then, you know, I kind of believe in some of that stuff too, where you know, mentally, you know, that's the rough cast magnet in there that you can hear a difference and you want it that way. And I made it that way and we're good.
Well, yeah. I think there's a lot of, you know, music is such an emotional thing. I think much of your comfort and your personal opinion of how you play is really rooted in how you feel about picking up the instrument in the first place.
There's that too. You know, like paper and oil capacitors in a guitar, you know, I like, it's like, oh, let's just put them in there. Then you know it's there. I don't know. You might be someplace playing and you just know everything's in line and it's all, you know, it's all good.
I spoke to a builder about a month ago, and he was telling me he did an A-B split test, and one of the things that made a huge difference in quality of sound was, and I'm not a technical guy, I've never messed around with this stuff, but he said spraying the pots on the inside versus not spraying them. I don't know what he meant spraying them with. I'm assuming some sort of coating, but he said he split tested this, and it made a huge difference.
Oh, like some sort of deoxidizer maybe, or...
I think I would imagine that's what he was referring to, but he said that he has A-B split tested that several times, and it's always made a huge impact in sound tone difference.
Yeah, it's possible. And some people's ears too are more sensitive than others. You know, it's almost like seeing colors. Some guy, you know, you might be a little colorblind to this color. Other guy might have, you know, be really tuned into that. And, you know, that's possible with hearing too, I think. You know, if somebody can hear it and they tell me, I'm okay with, you know, I believe them. I'm fine with that. And we'll just do it that way. You know, if somebody, we set out specs for something, then I just always make it that way. And, you know, it's possible. Maybe somebody else could hear the difference between the rough cast and the smooth cast magnet.
Sure.
If you specified it, that's what they wanted, then I'm okay with that too. And it's just, we just know these are the specs you want, and that's how we'll make it.
As far as musical influences go, who are your musical influences?
I like a lot of stuff. You know, as far as guitars, guitar tones. You know, I mean, Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page, you know, that I think that stuff's great. I can appreciate a lot of, you know, like even some newer bands like Queens of the Stone Age. I really enjoy their stuff. Man, there's a lot of people that I appreciate. I can appreciate almost all guitar build, you know, guitar players and stuff, just the different tones. I work with quite a variety, you know.
You mentioned Queens of the Stone Age. He's got a very unique style of playing, doesn't he?
He does. It's different, and his tone is different too.
Yes, his tone is different. His style of playing, it's great. I love their stuff, but it's really, you know, it's just different. It's very unique.
Yeah, those guys are they've developed their own sort of thing. You know, I was a fan of their music from the first album, but I fortunately got a chance to like work with them on stuff with Echo Park Guitars. Gabriel, we do a lot of guitars with my pickups for those guys, and we tune them different ways, and there's different, you know, things that he's looking for. And he has really unique ideas about tone and stuff. It's different sounding, you know, but you know, I definitely can appreciate what those guys are doing. And they rehearse here, you know, at the rehearsal complex nearby here. And so we get to, you know, check them out and hear them rehearse and work on stuff with them. So, yeah.
Man, it sounds like you're in like the perfect spot for lead generation there with this studio around the corner.
Yeah. You know, it's okay. It's not as, it's not as great as everybody like would think, like, oh man, there's just, you know, nonstop. It's like, we actually have to work all day long, but occasionally stuff comes up. You know, and it just happens to be more of a convenience thing, you know, because a lot of these guys I've kind of known and done stuff with. And you know, a lot of it kind of stems from like guitar builders, you know, and I just make myself available to them. They're, hey, we've got this artist and we're working on something with, so I'm available to consult with. And, you know, and then it's like, okay, we can make, you're making this guitar. We're going to make the exact perfect pickup to do what they want to do. And, you know, so it kind of stems from that, you know. I really value the relationships I have with a lot of the guitar builders too, because they kind of introduced me to a lot of artists as well. And, but yeah, it's nice, convenient whenever, you know, like artists we already know a lot of times is going to be rehearsing here, and then we can actually be on hand to spend some time with them when they're ready, you know, and that might be at 11:30 at night, you know, and so we have to be ready then.
I was curious, I asked you about your influences because I was curious if you ever sort of, as you mentioned earlier, reverse engineered a pickup to match the sound of, like, okay, I want to hear Jimmy Page's pickup during this album and during this song or this concert.
Yeah. There's people that are interested in like pickups for that kind of stuff. We kind of know with a lot of the classic albums, you know, like what kind of guitars they had at that time, you know, and then I have the specs on hand of, you know, for 50s PAFs, which there's a bunch of different versions. They varied a lot back then, or it might be somebody might have like a late 60s Strat. We kind of know, you know, the pathway or probably like 80% of what that probably is. And then there's just some variation in there. So we might have to then tweak it, but usually we'll make something and then our ears are the guide at the end. You know, we make it and then you listen to it. And then you say, are we there? You know, and that's the final thing. Like, okay, that's exactly it. We like this. And then those are the specs that we'll set for it. So there's a lot of stuff like that. I've thought of probably about almost all those guys, you know, like you know, what pickups they had in their guitar for this recording at that time, you know, Allman Brothers, you know, all that stuff. Like, what were these guitars, you know? What, you know, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, you know, Jeff Beck, all that stuff. We, you know, probably thought about it, you know, and you could probably kind of narrow it down.
You know. Does that, do you do that a lot when you're listening to people? Do you like, does it go through your mind? Oh, he's probably using this inside of this. Does that, like, a natural thing, like just out of habit?
Yeah, I like to kind of categorize stuff like, oh, this was a Strat here or a Tele here or a Les Paul or, you know, like in the case of Led Zeppelin too, some of the stuff wasn't as obvious, you know, and they're like, oh yeah, that was a Tele on that, you know, or some guys were more really consistent with what they were using, you know, or this was an SG, you know. And so I like to think about that, you know, you know, then you can get into that whole stuff too. Then there's a whole other category like Van Halen, like the early records, you know, what was he playing at this time and how did he change it, you know, and that gets into the whole category of super strats, which is, you know, the whole Van Halen category. That's even a category of itself, you know, which is also really interesting to me. Yeah.
Almost every technical guy I talk to, like guys like you that are super sharp with electronics, with building, whether it's pickups, amps, they always mention Eddie Van Halen, and they always refer to him pretty much the same way in a separate category because of all the stuff he had and how over the top he was with everything.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of different stuff that he was doing and changing things, and his pickups changed and he modified guitars. And, you know, I have like friends that we go, you know, almost like track by track, like, well, this was, you know, this was the Ibanez Destroyer, you know, anything with the non-tremolo on it, that was, you know, that pickup, and, you know, and, or this was the, you know, the Frankenstein. But then he changed the Frankenstein at this point. And you look at like pictures of like, wow, he's got a different pickup in here. You know, what was he using when he was recording it? And there's a whole, you know, and over the albums he changed and stuff. So that's a whole category in itself, you know. Sure. Because I mean, he was so influential in the guitar realm too. There's a lot of people that are influenced by that.
Yeah, for sure.
That's man. I like, you know, so.
Hey, if you weren't doing what you're doing now, what do you think you'd be doing instead?
I like to make things. I would probably be crafting something. I'm really into the crafting movement. I appreciate that kind of stuff. So I like to make things with my hands. So I'd have probably either been, maybe, I guess there's a percentage that I would have been an electrician or a, you know, maybe making bespoke leather, you know, wallets or, you know, jackets or something like that, or something crafted for sure. You know, maybe a gunsmith. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that. I would definitely be making things. You know, I'd probably either, you know, wire, metal, leather, or something.
That's very cool. Who's the most important person in your life?
The most important person would actually be my daughter. I have a 12-year-old daughter.
That's awesome. So why is that?
I take, you know, being a dad serious. So, you know, I try to do to be a good dad. And, so that's, we spend a lot of time together. We do a lot of things, together. So yeah, I enjoy that as well.
That's really nice to hear, man. Just as a friendly advice, which I'm sure you've heard, you're at that cusp, right? Things, your feelings and thoughts may change from this time next year if we speak at age 12 to 13, man.
Yeah, they say the teenage years, that's when it gets pretty rocky, but
yeah, it's tough.
It's been good so far, so I'm hopeful, you know, but we'll see. We'll see what kind of challenges come up.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice to hear that, though. Yeah, it's tough sometimes with girls. Yeah. I know you work a ton. You have any hobbies or interests outside of music?
Yes. I am also into stuff called bushcraft. I'm into that.
What's that?
It's sort of like old time survival skills. You know, I'm into hiking as well, you know, and outdoor things. I like to go on short and long hikes, you know. Very cool. So outdoor activities like that. You know, going to the beach, swimming, going to places, seeing stuff. Yeah, that's some of them. I'm interested in almost everything. So I have a wide variety of interest: antiques, generally old stuff, old rusty things, swap meets. I'm into all that. I'm interested in almost everything.
You know what, man? You sound like a very balanced guy, and all those things. As somebody who's raised three kids already, that probably is going to make a tremendous imprint on your daughter that she won't realize and articulate to you until later. But I would bet anything that has a very, in a very positive, strong way.
I hope so. I hope so. We try to do a variety of stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Very cool. What's a favorite part of what you do?
I actually like to build the parts up. I also enjoy taking pictures of stuff. So probably some of that, building things and taking pictures and doing coming up with ideas for like engravings or developing new models. I like to do that stuff. I for sure like vintage stuff, but I like to do like the variations on vintage. The creative process of that, coming up with something new is always satisfying.
Yeah, you could tell you are definitely motivated by being creative, any aspect of the creative stuff, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I try to add that too, because pickups are pretty small items. So to try to add some creativity to that is, I guess, important to me. I try to make them as interesting as they can be.
Do you think that's one of the things that makes Arcane different from the average? Or the other pickup manufacturers in general?
I think that's a priority for me. To try to because I serial number everything that I make, and they're all logged. So I try to make each one special and unique.
Yeah.
So I try to bring an artistic aspect to it. That's sort of old world craftsman stuff. So I kind of take pride in that. So I really try to bring that to it so that somebody's going to have this thing, 50 years down the road and be like, what is this? And be able to look at the serial number and where did this come from? What is it? And
sure.
Say what it is. So I try to make each one special, and the process is important to me too. That's why we do like the hand winding or even parts that we make, like the process, how they're made, on old machines and stuff is, I find that important, just how it's done as well. Even though it might not be obvious instantly, I know that it's done that way. So that's important as well.
Well, having that pride of ownership is a big thing too, because I think work ethic is, as you probably know, it's in a scarcity nowadays. And when you have that, I think it separates a big differential.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think that, but I think there's also, a craftsmanship type of movement coming around. People are being able to appreciate that kind of stuff. So I'm seeing that, you can find guys that are, making stuff, handmade stuff, so it seems like there's it's having a resurgence in a lot of ways. And hopefully people can appreciate that. So.
It is. And it's funny you mentioned making leather products. I mean, that is one of the hottest, you got, small companies just popping up all over. Some guys will just make leather casings for tools for guys. Other people will specialize in, wallets or small purses or large purses for women. And I'm seeing this all over. You're 100% right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. Or even other stuff I'm into, raw denim and stuff. There's guys that will handcraft jeans and stuff. I like that stuff, and shoes too. You can go deep on that, handcrafted stuff that's made by small and small builders, or guys by themselves just in their shop. So I try to support that stuff as well.
Did you see Santana has his own line of shoes now? Carlos Santana.
Oh, I did see that.
On Facebook. He was promoting, he was throwing a lot of money at ad spend on Facebook on that.
I was surprised by that because it was ladies' shoes, right?
So No. It was guys' shoes. It was men's shoes.
Really? I remember in the past. For some ladies, but okay, interesting. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was surprised as well.
I'm quite particular about the types of shoes I like, because I'm more into the vintage industrial kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go check him out. He seems to be an interesting guy.
Yeah, he does seem to be an interesting guy. Is there a least favorite part of what you do?
It used to be, I get a lot of email volume and trying to keep up with it. That could be difficult for me, but, I've been readjusting my attitude about that, you know, and I have a special place where I sit and try to answer all my emails, and, it's hard to keep up with them every day, but I am definitely, making an effort to do that. And, cause it can get kind of daunting where you get like, 20 questions, 20 emails with like, 3 or 4 paragraph questions, and to answer those whenever you've got to, get stuff finished, first thing in the morning. But that was the harder part for me, but I've actually been readjusting my mental, outlook on that. And, I'm finding I'm doing a better job. And so I try to do them more immediately now.
Well, it's tough too, because you're running a business, and if each of those emails, if you had a way of saying, okay, this guy is going to be a customer, that guy, not that you only want to deal with customers, but when you're so inundated, you have to have some governor.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is just to have somebody else do it for me. They're not going to probably be able to really answer the questions properly.
Yeah. That's very tough.
So, because there's guys that I know are, they want to know these things. In the past I had had trouble like keeping up with that, but, so I don't know, maybe sometimes too, I just try to talk to somebody and I could talk to them on the phone for 3 minutes and answer those questions instead of spending, 20 minutes typing out a really long, elaborate, response. So,
first response, that doesn't include the follow up.
Yeah. Yeah. So that part is challenging and stuff, but I think I found that I've put more information out there about stuff, people can then just say, okay, I want this, and that reduces the level of questions. Because I used to in the past just put, things out that were kind of cryptic, here's a picture of this, what is it? You got to have a detailed description and stuff. And so that kind of helps alleviate that too. So I'm always working on getting better at, being a better interface with people. I'm trying to improve that aspect.
That's cool. I think I am too. I always think that's important. I like to do that. Two more questions, and we'll let you go. I want to be sensitive to time. First question is, what's the most important lesson your business has taught you?
The most important lesson, I guess, would be, you got to always, to run a business, you've always got to be, vigilant of, making sure you're getting the word out there, and then also shipping product in a timely fashion, and getting paid for it as well. So having a flow is for sure important, just as far as like running a business. But then again, too, I guess the bottom line is too, if you make stuff people want and they're, you always got to, I guess the primary focus then is to make things that people find exciting and want.
Yep.
And then generally you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. So I always try to do stuff like that, that there's make things that are, that people, can get excited about. But that's probably the most important thing. But fortunately, I like doing that. I like to do, interesting, creative stuff, and people seem to like it. So that's the number one priority.
Is to make stuff people want.
Yes.
Yeah. That's obviously very. Yeah.
I guess there are people can get excited about it.
Yes. Yeah.
Which in some ways, pickups. It's, some people might think like, oh, it's a pretty basic thing, but you can do a lot of stuff actually. If you think about it. Make them interesting.
It's funny. I had an early mentor, a guy who taught me how to write ad copy. And one of the things he said to me was, he goes, there's so much. He was talking exactly what you said. He goes, you got to sell stuff people want. He goes, there's so much, so many things you can do out there. He goes, why the fuck would you ever sell life insurance? Meaning, when you talk to someone about life insurance, it's like, it's the last thing they want to discuss. No one's getting excited about, and that's the key words you said. No one's getting excited about getting their life insurance policy, and it's a hard sell because of that.
But I guess the way they sell them is because people need it.
Yeah, you know? Right.
But I don't know. I've worked in a lot of different aspects of the guitar industry, and I've worked, you know, I've been involved in sales departments too of stuff, and like I've seen, you know, there's guitars that people really want and are exciting, and then there's other ones that, you know, guitars and basses that people are just not that excited about. And those are much harder to sell, and that's, you know, if you can do that, you know, I guess that's as a guitar builder too. If you're making stuff that people are really excited about, they will want to buy them and, you know, have that. So yeah, you know, I like working with guys like that have, you know, make exciting guitars, and if I can contribute to that, that's satisfying. But yeah, definitely try to focus on making things people get excited about.
Last question, Rob, what's your definition of happiness?
That is a good question. I guess feeling fulfilled. You know, there's a lot of different ways to do that. You know, I guess me personally, I fall in and out of happiness at different times. You know, but I try to be more happy. You know, I guess doing whatever you find satisfying. So I find doing this and having my own company satisfying. You know, I've worked for other, you know, people in the past, and I found that less satisfying. So this is definitely more satisfying.
Oh yeah,
and being in charge of my own destiny with that. You know, having being fulfilled, living simply for me. I'm trying to live more simply as well. So that can make me pretty happy.
Awesome. Hey, listen, man, I can't thank you enough for your time. I just want to tell everybody out there that Rob he builds some really good stuff, and he's a pretty demanding guy of himself. I hope you could hear that. Is there anything you want to promote, Rob, or anything else? Where could people find you online?
Just my website, arcaneinc.com. And also Instagram is a good way to see stuff that I'm doing pretty much daily that's more interesting. It's arcane.inc on Instagram. And that's it.
Awesome, man. Listen, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. And everybody, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. I want to say thanks so much again to Rob Timmons for spending his time with us. And go to Everyone Loves Guitar, and you can sign up to get notified about future episodes, along with some other cool new things we'll be doing for guitar players. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. Until next time, guys, I'm out. Peace. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.